Hey, what's up, everybody? Justin Ochoa back with another episode of the Gym Sessions Podcast. And episode 21 is a reshare of my recent guest appearance on the High Performance Hoops Podcast hosted by Julian Lacosto. I was super excited for how this episode turned out. Thought it turned out great. Had a great conversation with Julian. Had fun recording this. And I wanted to share it with you guys. So that's what we're doing this week. We've got new, fresh episodes and interviews banked up in the archives for next week and the week following. So I wanted to throw this in and really let you guys hear this interview in case you missed it the first time around, because I really thought this turned out great. So episode 21, the High Performance Hoops Podcast, my guest appearance. We'll be back next week with new, fresh content, but I hope you guys enjoy and thank you so much for tuning in.
You're listening to the High Performance Hoops Podcast, bringing you your one-stop shop on all things training, sports performance, nutrition for athletes, and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and help you crack the code on elite athletic performance with your host, Julian Lacosto.
What up, fellow hoopers, basketball enthusiasts, and coaches out there? Welcome to episode 7 of season 2 of the High Performance Hoops Podcast, brought to you by Challenger Strength. I am your host, as always, Julian Lacosto. If you're new here, guys, hit that subscribe button. If you've been here before, throw us a rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show get out there, guys. And, you know, thank you for all of those that have been tuning in so far. It's really amazing what we've been able to do in just 22 short episodes. Honestly, it's just insane to me just like how far this has come so far and what I really think this show can become in the near future. So thank you guys again for following along on this journey. It's been really incredible so far. Before we get started today, guys, just a reminder as always, follow me on social media at Julian Lacosto on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok for more content related to sports performance and all things training. And if you haven't listened to the previous episode, especially the last three episodes featuring special guests, Tommy Hansen, we're talking a lot about organizing plyometrics, building stiffness, and the four keys to improving your approach jump. We talked to Joey Burton, NBA shooting coach, talking all things shooting, building your brand, and the steps needed to follow your dreams. And then lastly, Josh Fan to round out the last three. He is the previous Jeremy Lin strength coach for the last 10 off seasons. He's now starting his own thing with Awaken Training. If you guys haven't followed his YouTube, definitely go do that. He's a phenomenal follow. We talk a lot about skill acquisition and building more resilient athletes. So if you have not listened to those three, go check it out wherever you're listening to this episode. You definitely don't want to miss out on those and all the little gems and nuggets that we've had on those episodes. So go listen to those if you haven't. Today, I am welcoming on a colleague and good buddy of mine, Justin Ochoa. Believe it or not, we had been following each other for such a long time on social. He was actually one of the first guys that I followed in this industry on Twitter, and I just immediately resonated with his content and just what he does, just because I was kind of in a similar boat when I first started. We come from very humble beginnings and similar paths to how we got into the industry. He's the owner and head trainer at Pace Fit Academy. And, you know, he's worked with tons of athletes of all levels, including overseas professionals and way more in terms of basketball. So, guys, you're definitely not going to want to miss this. We talk about becoming a hybrid coach, basically not being confined to one particular lane in terms of training and sports performance. And then we talk a lot about operating in the gray area, basically blending skill and performance training. So you're definitely going to want to get your notebooks out for this one, guys. So I'm not going to keep you too much longer. Let's get to this episode with Justin Ochoa. What up, everybody? I want to take the time right now to welcome on owner and head trainer of Pace Fit Academy, Justin Ochoa. How are we doing today, man? Thank you for coming on the show.
I'm good, man. How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you. Now, I know you have a pretty unique story in how you got into the industry, like myself, very unconventional. So please take a moment to share your journey and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely an unconventional route, I would say. You know, it's kind of like the typical story up to a certain point where, you know, every strength coach or performance coach kind of started their journey due to a failed athletic career or, you know, sports not going the way that they wanted it to for them. And I'm no different. So once basketball kind of ended for me, I almost went through like this resentment phase. Because I was probably just coming to grips with the fact that I just wasn't as good as I thought I was. And I started to explore other options as far as like my college major. This is like going into like my sophomore, junior year. And I came across telecommunications and I went to Ball State. So that's David Letterman's alma mater. And he has a really good program there in the media world. And so I'm like, you know what? I'll talk about sports if I can't play them anymore. And I got into that program and I just immediately knew it was not for me. it was not for me. I missed the action. I missed the team atmosphere. I missed like having to hold myself accountable, not only for myself, but like for the greater good of something bigger than myself. And so that resentment phase was over. And then I'm like, damn, I miss sports. And, going into my junior year, I looked into changing my major to exercise science or kinesiology or something along those lines. And they were like, yeah, well, you're on track for this Bachelor of Arts. And what you want to do is a Bachelor of Science. And so you're basically going to have to start over. And that was a huge no for me because I'm not a good student. I wasn't a good student. School is just not for me. I was really good at college, but not the academic part. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know what? I'll just self-educate and do this myself. And that's when I started getting more into, you know, training, kind of back into training myself. I got immediately back into coaching basketball, training guys on the court, just reading the type of stuff that was popular at the time, like Mike Robertson, Eric Cressy, Joe DeFranco, Tony Gentilcore, I'm trying to think of some names, Mike Boyle, all those guys that were kind of like ahead of their times back then, putting out resources. That's who educated me. And then so I started to get certifications as I was finishing up college, going through like the NASM and the NSCA and all the different avenues that you can do to kind of get your education. And I graduated with a telecommunications degree. And took a job at a radio station right out of college and immediately started my training career on the side. So before and after work, I was training people. I go to my 9-to-5, get through that, and then go back to the gym, train other people. I did that for about a year until I was able to take the leap of faith and just go full time with it. So that's kind of the condensed version. There was a lot of ups and downs along that, obviously, probably more downs than ups, but it gave me kind of the, you know, the rugged background that I needed to be like, okay, is this something I really want to do? Because if it wasn't, when it got hard, I would have quit. And, you know, I found out very quickly that this was kind of like my calling, my purpose, and it helped me really, you know, make sure that I was in it for the right reasons. And ever since then, since 2012, man, we've been going hard.
Yeah, man, that's great. I mean, I share a very similar story, so your story resonates with me very well. So I guess my next follow-up to that would be, what was the biggest challenge that you went through early on when you were still kind of working at that radio station and trying to get to the point where you could go full-time with your career? What was like the biggest challenge during that point?
Oh man, that's a really good question. I think at the time, the biggest challenge was one thing, and I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. And then now looking at it in hindsight, I think there was probably a different challenge that I didn't realize, you know, kind of as I mature more and kind of got deeper into my career. But immediately right off the bat, the biggest challenge was money. And mm-hmm. so I had a easy job, like 9-to-5. I was doing marketing for three radio stations. I was actually really good at that job that I hated, which was kind of ironic. And and I had a good salary. You know what I mean? I was 22 or 23 coming out of college, had a good salary. You know, life was pretty easy. Like if I wanted to just to accept that and just be like, yeah, this is how it's going to be. But walking away from that, you lose that stability, you lose the benefits, you lose the insurance, you lose the salary, and you basically have to eat what you kill. And so like I was a killer, you know what I mean? I was just really like hustling, trying to make my way into an industry that I felt kind of like I wasn't wanted in a certain sense, you know what I mean? Because I didn't have that traditional background. I didn't have the resume. I didn't have the internship, the major in college. Like, so walking away from money was hard at a young age when you grew up, like basically just trying to get money, trying to get to that point where you're comfortable and you're like, okay, I got it, but I'm not happy. So, you know, now it's time to leave this. And so that was like at the time, my biggest struggle was like, okay, I'm walking away from this. It's guaranteed. All I got to do is show up and I get this money. Or I can go do my own thing, work for myself. And, you know, if I suck at it, then I fall flat on my face and I go back to being broke. So that was a very scary moment, probably the biggest challenge. But over the years, as I've kind of like matured and realized that, you know, money isn't everything. And even when you get money, there's like, you know, it doesn't solve any problems. It's just a tool and a resource, and you can easily just use that just as much as anybody else. I think the biggest challenge would probably be just trying to figure out how to like present yourself to clients or prospective like hiring managers at gyms and say like, hey, I don't have what you typically would see from an applicant. Like, but this is what I do have. You know what I mean? These are my strengths. I know my weaknesses. We already know my weaknesses. You don't have to tell me I don't have a degree in this. But like, let's not focus on the problems. Let's figure out the solutions. And so, yeah, my weakness might be that I lack a formal education, but my strength is that I have just as much, if not more, education on this topic, and nobody forced me to do it. And I had to pay for it outside of, you know, some of the grants and stuff that I was financial grants and stuff that I was getting for school. So it was like, it's almost like I had to work a little bit harder to get what I have educationally. And so that I feel like is not a negative thing. It's actually a reason that you should hire me or interview me. So at the time I didn't see that, and eventually it clicked for me, and that's eventually how I got my first job. But yeah, at the time it was like, just no. Like, you don't have XYZ experience. You don't have the recommendations, blah, blah, blah. And that formal like track of how people are told this is how you get your first job, it just wasn't in the cards for me. So I had to get creative, figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, I think that's a big thing right there. I mean, we talk about it a lot because I feel like the number one thing that people always talk about when it comes to this industry is that you have to have some kind of formal education in this in order to actually make it. But in reality, if you're trying to get on the private side, you don't really need to have that formal education. Obviously, that, you know, you have to have certifications or whatever just to kind of deal with the legality of things and like the formalities, but you don't really need to have a actual degree in this to actually make it work. Yeah. Some of the smartest people in this industry that I know did not go to college for this. And that's like the biggest thing that I feel like people need to take away. If there's any young coaches listening to this, if your goal is to be on the private side, the formal education is probably not something that you need to do, especially the debt that you're probably going to end up piling up anyway to do that. It's you're better off, like you said, like just kind of going out on your own and seeking the knowledge out, rather than and just paying out of pocket for courses or mentorships or whatever the case may be. Those things are way more valuable than the piece of paper that you're going to get anyway. And 9 times out of 10, those classes don't even teach you the actual things that you need to succeed in this industry, especially like when it comes to working with large teams and stuff. They don't teach you that in a book. Like, they don't teach you how to command a room of 20 to 40 kids. Like, they don't teach you any of that stuff. So, I mean, I think you don't need a formal thing unless you're trying to work with a professional organization. That's different. Then obviously you got to get whatever you got to get. But I personally don't think that there's anything that says that you need a degree in this in order to make it on the private side.
Yeah. And to your point, like, once you get your foot in the door and you get experience and you work on your craft, like those opportunities that previously would have required a certain level of education or a certain certification or whatever, they might present themselves just off the strength of your professional resume, like what you do. You know what I mean? Like I was a strength coach for the pro hockey team here for 2 years. And I walked into the interview and told the dude, like, hey, I don't have this certification that you want me to have. And I'm not getting it because I don't need it because I've been in the game now doing this. I was probably like 6 years in at the time. But I was like, I mean, I've been training for 6 years. I've owned my own gym for four of them. Like, what are we talking about? You know what I mean?
They were
No, they didn't even blink. They were just like, yeah, who cares? Like, are you good at the job? Yeah. They were recommended to me by other people that thought highly of me. And I'm like, see, once you get to that point, then it's like you really see how the game kind of works. Like you can get opportunities at those higher levels without the formal education because you actually have the education of being in the trenches, like doing the work for years and years and years. And people that are at that high level, they know how important that is. You know what I mean? So
yeah, at the end of the day, the work speaks for itself. It's like, what do you actually do? And have you actually been successful at it? Because that's the only way that people are going to actually respect you at the end of the day is if you actually do this stuff. If you're somebody who's fresh out of school and you basically tell somebody like, oh, I don't have this and I don't have that and I don't even have the experience, then who's going to hire you?
Right.
But at the end of the day, you gotta have that success and that track record. You already, like you said, it's like, I've done this for so long and I've gotten this X result. So it's like, why not?
Yeah.
So I think like the really interesting thing though, that I've come to know about you is that you're in this new class of like performance professionals where you're almost like this hybrid coach. So you like kind of work with athletes on the court as well as in the weight room. Talk about what your outlook is on what a hybrid coach is and what went into becoming one.
Yeah, man. So it's definitely a new journey for me as well. Like it kind of just happened. And, you know, in the past I've worn like multiple hats within like this world of basketball.
Yep.
And I mentioned hockey earlier. That was kind of like a random thing. But, you know, I'm pretty much like 99% of the people that I deal with every day are basketball. Mm-hmm. So starting off coaching, you know, obviously grew up playing, got into coaching, then got into a little bit of player development. And then I felt like I was just like getting more demand early in my career for like the strength, conditioning, performance side. So I just went with that because, you know, as you know, you have to just do what you have to do to make your career like successful. So I kind of put the basketball skill development stuff on the shelf for like 3 or 4 years. And then what was kind of like the catalyst to all this was in 2017, I got back surgery. And so like at that time, I was still playing on the regular, you know, playing 2 or 3 times a week. And then I got surgery and, you know, that was taken away from me for about like 6 months. And as I got back into playing myself, I was like, wow, like I love this process. You know what I mean? Yeah. I love going from zero to like trying to get myself back to a respectable athlete out there. Mm-hmm. And so along the way, I started picking up clients just like organically through that. But still, like I was kind of booming more on the strength conditioning side. So I never made it like a service that I would offer other than, you know, just certain people hitting me up here and there. But it became around like 2020 going into 2021 where I just felt like, I don't know, there was a void in Indianapolis of like player development that was like actually developing athleticism and some of the traits that are needed to play at a high level. So we have really good skill guys around here that I'm cool with and that I still to this day refer out to, because I don't want to interrupt people's relationships if they have athletes that we share that lift with me and train on the court with them. That relationship is more important to me than anything. And so I never try to like peel people away, but I also position myself like where, and this is going to sound arrogant, but I promise you it's not. It's just like a lot of people aren't doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily, you know, skill work where we're going to practice, you know, game situations all the time, and we're going to practice our reads off pick and rolls, and we're going to get into like all these different situational components of training, which are definitely valuable. This is more of like the athletic development side of training, and it happens to be on the court. So we're working on traits and the characteristics needed to be a good basketball player, and we're working that into some of our skill development. So on the court, sometimes we might not even shoot. We might just be having a ball to put the context in place to the position that I'm trying to have you get into while you take this curved sprint or while you accelerate. Or, you know, maybe the ball is just a prop to give you something to react to and chase. And we do get into situational stuff and we get into small-sided games, but it's kind of like my way of bridging the gap between what am I seeing in the weight room? Well, actually, what am I seeing on film first? What do we need to improve on? What are we doing in the weight room to get that adaptation that we are trying to achieve? And then what do we need to do on the court to apply some of the things that we did in the weight room to get it to stick in this context of the sport? And so I'm trying to basically blend all that together to give them like a holistic approach to the game. And a lot of guys will do on-court with me and they'll do strength work with me. And then they'll go to another guy for their pure skill stuff where they might work on, you know, changing their jump shot or things like that. That is something I'm not necessarily interested in at this point is, you know, helping somebody make tweaks to their jump shot that are major. You know, I can see stuff and point it out like, hey, don't flick your thumb or, hey, you know, get your release point a little bit higher or whatever the case may be. That's easy, but I'm not going to like make over your shot. Or I'm not going to spend hours working on this new move, adding it to your bag that cost me like reps and reps and reps of time to implement. It's more of like a pure movement and athletic base output that we're going for on the court and then kind of like blending that with what we do in the weight room. And so, you know, to me, just a hybrid coach is somebody who can identify those things first in the game or on film, or at least through conversation with the athlete and what they need to do. Create a program for that's holistic and kind of incorporates all the elements of sport and from a flexibility and mobility standpoint as well, aside from just the outputs that you want, and just like blending that together so that the athlete can get exactly what they need from you as efficiently as possible without having to go to 8 different facilities to get what they need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's so valuable because I think as professionals, we often hear a ton of people in the industry make the comment, you know, saying, you know, jack of all trades, master of none, or, you know, you have to stay in your own lane. But you are so many, like, you and so many others in the basketball space now are kind of like tearing down those notions and kind of paving a new path for sports performance professionals. What's your opinion about being told that you kind of have to stay in your own lane?
Dude, I love that because it's such a funny answer. It's such an easy answer. Yep. And it's like, who decides what the lane is? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Why can't my lane just be basketball? Like, that's what I do, right? So it's funny that people have told me that, and I've had local, I've seen like some sub tweets at me, and like some I've heard through athletes through the grapevine that so-and-so is not happy that I'm doing this or whatever. And it's like, people project their own shortcomings or their own insecurities mm-hmm. onto other people when they don't know how to deal with them themselves, or when they don't feel comfortable doing something themselves. And so for me, not one time have I ever let it like deter me or irritate me. And I think that's big in terms of like where I'm at right now in my life, because if I would have done this, you know, when I was 23, 24, 25, just getting started, I would have shut down because I couldn't have handled like the rebuttal from people. Like I was such a people pleaser and just wanted to kind of make everybody happy. But, you know, as I've grown over the years and matured, been in different situations as a coach at the high school level, a strength coach at the pro level, private side, gym owner, dad, husband, like all these components of life have helped me realize that, you know, as long as you understand that, you know, you're within yourself, if you accept yourself, if you're happy with where you're at and what your purpose is, then, you know, the outside noise means nothing. And so that's kind of where I'm at with it. Like, I really truly think that it's a limiting belief from others that they're trying to cast onto you because they're afraid that you're going to like invade their territory. Yeah. And that's another thing. It's like, you know, we don't get to say like we own these athletes or like, that's not my guy. And you know what I mean? It's like, yep. We're trying to help someone. And if they feel like I can help them, then I'm going to do everything I can to try to help them. And if they don't, then that's fine. I would actually probably help them find somebody that might be a better fit. So for me, it just comes to, you know, just knowing like what your purpose is and being like truly all in and bought in on what you're trying to do and believing in yourself. And so the people that can't understand it, it's not for them to understand. And so, yeah, I mean, I've actually put a lot of thought into that where I'm like, damn, like people really get salty about this. And I'm really genuinely trying to help other people. Like it's not that deep. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think like young coaches, especially that are like interested in both or that want to kind of get into doing what you do. It's kind of funny because like you said, it's like, I feel like as a young coach, you don't want to step on eggshells. You don't want to like, you don't want to like, kind of like be that guy that kind of like creates controversy in the industry by like doing all these different things. Because I was in the same boat as you. I got started in this around the same age as well. So it was like one of those things where, you know, I wanted to have my hand in all these different hats, but I had so many people in the industry that I respected that were like, oh, you can't do that. And it's like, you got to only stick to one thing. But it's like, where is it that we actually have to be in this one category? Like if I'm a strength coach, who says that I just have to only be a strength coach? Last I checked, the word is, it's more so of a performance coach kind of mindset. Right. Like we're working on so many different things. And I relate it to the meme of SpongeBob when he's like in his house doing all the chores and he's got his like a million hands doing all these different things. Yeah. That's in reality what our job is. We have our hands in so many different things. We have to deal with so many demands that the sport places on the athlete that we have to kind of have our hand dipped in all these different things. We have to be on the performance side. We have to know what they're doing on the skill side because it ultimately affects their nervous system and how it affects their ability to perform in the weight room. Like we have to work on their nutrition because that's also a big part of performance. Like, so we ultimately always have our hands in so many different areas of performance, yet we have all these people telling us that we shouldn't be doing these things or we should be staying in only our one little lane in the weight room. But it's like, that doesn't make any sense because if you actually look at what we do from like a broader perspective, it's like we have our hands in like so many different like hats. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Like I kind of got caught up a little bit, you know, talking like it was just like me and my boy talking, but I forgot I was on a podcast. There is an educational, like scientific benefit to it.
Yeah.
Well. You know what I mean? It's like, if you are working with somebody in one realm or the other, let's say you're just the weight room guy or just the core hour guy, it's very important to know what that athlete is doing other than the 1 hour that they spend with you.
Yes.
So if you're not in communication, like close communication with their other trainers, then I would say that you might not be getting the most out of that experience. And that's kind of like going above and beyond. But so, yeah, same thing. You know, I know what my athletes are doing in the weight room, and I know what they're doing on the court because they're still doing it. They're doing it all with the same person. So I can adjust and I know who they're playing pickup with, and I know what pro-am they're playing in, or I know what their travel schedule is like. And it's like, it helps as a coach monitor that load and fatigue and just make the correct recommendations for like some of the auto-regulation strategies that we have, because maybe we plan to go on the court and do, you know, a little bit of speed work and we got carried away and we went way overboard and I fried your legs. Well, now I'm not sending you down the street to some dude that doesn't give a shit what you're doing. Like, we're just going to walk to the weight room and I know I just murdered you. And so I can alter what your lift is going to be that day. You know what I mean? And to your point also, like, I still have trainers that I work with and kind of refer out to. And, you know, we're kind of working on a new facility right now. I'm kind of like, I don't have a home base right now, so I'm bouncing around. But I've brought on one of my former pro clients that has since retired, and he started his training career. So it's going to be more of like a system where it's not necessarily just me doing all the work. Like, not just lift with me. You might just not train with me. You might go see CJ on the court, or you might lift with Tavon and then see me on the court or whatever. So I'm developing like this team that all has the same, we're under the same umbrella and program. So it's not so much like I'm trying to have my hand in on everything and trying to do everything myself. I'm trying to build this team that understands like what the program is. And, you know, one of them is a former player of mine, and the other is a former intern of mine. So they know exactly what the program is like and what we can do and how much we can benefit athletes when we all are on the same page and we work together. And then, you know, just to your point, imagine like just having to do one thing, right? Like, imagine you have a high school senior who's training with you and they come in and they're like, "Coach, I'm so stressed. I have 4 AP tests tomorrow. My girlfriend just broke up with me." And you're like, "You know what? The S and the C stands for strength and conditioning. So I am not here to help you with your mental aspect of your life. Like, I can't touch that." You know what I mean? It's like, what would you look like as a coach just being like, ignoring all the easy low hanging fruit that we can like instill in our athletes?
Exactly.
Trying to quote unquote, stay in your lane. You know, it's just, it's kind of a silly thing to me. And I don't like plan on, you know, giving chiropractic adjustments to any of my athletes or trying to like do table tests on them or anything like that. I'll refer out to that. But if there's something easy that I can help with, like, I'm gonna do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
need absolutely
to help my athletes.
Yeah, exactly. I think I feel like you just keep going back to it. So I kind of want to ask your perspective on it. But like, the whole collaborative aspect in the industry is also pretty big. Like, if you have people that are in your niche that are things that you can easily refer out to, I feel like as professionals, it's our duty to kind of like make sure we have a network of people that we can just be like, "Hey, like, I might not be the best at this. I know some stuff about it, but I'm not always the best. Here, I think you should go to this person." What's that collaborative aspect look like for you, and how have you been able to do that over the years?
Yeah, I think as a young coach, I might have fallen into that trap of just wanting to do everything myself, right? And trying to. And what I've realized is that the reason why people try to do all that and take all that on and not refer out is so they can make themselves look better. Yeah. Like, I know everything. But what I've found is that you actually look way better and way cooler when you refer out, because you got a guy for everything.
Yeah. Right?
It's like, everybody, it's almost like a joke now around like our community that like I have a guy for everything, and people will hit me up. It will be athletes like, "Yo, I want to get a tattoo. Like, send me your guy's number," or something not even related to sports. It's just like, everybody knows that I have a person for everything. I'm trying not to say guy because I have women that I refer out to as well. And so it's just like, you know, that collaborative effort, I think it all comes back to just, do you want to help? And if you do, you know, how can you help? Maybe I cannot actually help you do X, Y, Z, whatever it is. But if I know somebody, or even if I know somebody that knows somebody who can help, I'm definitely going to refer you to that person, because one, it helps. You know, that's the bottom line, is like, we're trying to get you what you need. Two, it builds that relationship with that other person, so that now if they're ever in a position to refer out, I'm at the top of their mind as well, because they're like, oh, you know, Justin sent me that person who needed that. Now I just met a person who needs training. I'm going to ship them out over to Justin. So it builds that bridge as well. And then lastly, it's just like, it gives you like that good sense of community where, you know, I'm very much of the opinion, like, there's more than enough people, athletes, money, whatever to go around. Yep. Like, you cannot serve everyone. So I really want to spread it out as much as I can, because everybody can eat. Everybody can eat. And so if you are, you know, one of those people that just accepts that, and you genuinely like give off good energy to other people, I just truly believe that it'll come back, and it'll come back even stronger. And that's something I'm big on, is just sometimes it's not even, doesn't have to be a service or money or anything like that. It's just like energy that you put out, I think, is always going to make a return, good or bad. So for me, I'm trying to put out as much positive energy as I can.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really important. I think it goes back to what we were talking about before in terms of being that jack of all trades kind of guy. It's like, you can definitely do that. You could definitely be that guy that kind of has their hand in every little thing. But I think, like you mentioned, it's like, you look like an even better person when you can kind of humble yourself and be like, hey, I do know this stuff. I can't help you with it, but I might not be the best person for you. So here's this recommendation. Go to this person instead. You look like a way better professional when you do that, rather than just trying to be the person who tries to take on too much and do things that you can't handle. I think that goes a long way in terms of like you as a professional over time. And I think young coaches need to learn that early before they make that mistake of trying to do too much too early. And again, that doesn't go back to saying like you can't do all these things. It just means that you have to know when and where to kind of pick your spots of when to be that person.
Right. Yeah. There's a time and a place. I think, kind of like I mentioned earlier, technically I probably could have done this hybrid thing like right off the bat, but I don't think I would have had the credibility in either lane to pull it off successfully. So it's about like knowing yourself, and quite honestly, I probably wasn't ready to, you know, like I continuously have worked on both of those crafts and trying to get better at them every single day. And I think that, you know, kind of focusing on the strength conditioning aspect gave me a really, really good start to like build this successful program. And then, so that bought me, I guess, like time, if you will, by getting those clients and developing a relationship with them and kind of like developing a reputation within the community, to where now it's not like I'm just trying to sell you everything I can do. It's like people come, they ask what we do, and then we can present that to them. And if they want to do one or the other, that's fine. If they want to do both, that's fine. It's like, just come here, get what you want, get what you feel like you can benefit the most from, and I'll help you try to bridge the gap elsewhere if you want to go elsewhere for one or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's massively important. But now I want to kind of shift over to kind of like this whole operating in the gray area kind of thing. Like, obviously, we keep talking about the whole hybrid coach blending skill and performance training. I've heard you talk about this gray area and kind of operating both in skill and performance. Can you give us kind of like a definition of what skill is to you and versus what performance training is to you?
Yeah, for sure. So I would say like performance is going to be like your general training to develop the qualities needed to succeed at that athletic event. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, if you will, it's like the strength conditioning or the sports performance stuff. That's going to be, how are you building the athletic qualities that you need to play your sport? Yep. And then on the skill side, you're looking at more of like the tactical and the technical things that are needed to develop those attributes of the sport. So from a technical standpoint, you know, you're looking at kind of the qualities again that you're needed to excel at that sport. And then the tactical things, you're looking at some of the IQ, some of the why behind why you're doing what you're doing. So for me, it's like, if you can have a good understanding of what an athlete needs and how you can get them to improve on some of those things, then you can blur those lines and kind of like work in that gray area and get them kind of closer to what the end goal might be.
Yeah. And like for you, what would the assessment process look like for a young athlete that might be working with you on both sides? Obviously, we mentioned it before. Obviously, having an athlete under one roof is pretty damn special if you have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So talk to us about what that process looks like for you as the professional, putting the person through both skill and performance.
Yeah, so it's kind of changed over the years. It's been kind of like this ever evolving thing, and I'm probably going to add some stuff. I'm going through like this 3D maps Gray Institute process right now, so I might implement some of that stuff in the assessment. But yeah. Over the years, just like to generalize it, it's been some type of movement component, some type of movement assessment, some type of athletic component, like an output, like a vertical jump or a 10, 20 meter sprint, and then some type of like skill assessment where I might watch film, watch a game, just have a general conversation of what you need to or what I think you need to improve on in the sport. And, you know, this is like working off a perfect world scenario.
Yeah.
Where I can develop both kind of aspects of the game. But I'm big on data, so I love to get baselines for all of the things that we test, you know, whether it's a vertical jump with an approach or non-approach, whatever, whether it's sprint times. We have a 1080 sprint, so I'm big on just like collecting all that data, like velocity, power, force. We have that. VBT is huge in our program, so we might do like a low velocity chart for somebody who needs to get stronger so we can make like more precise recommendations. But that assessment process, I would say it's like 70-30 of this is always the things that we're going to look at. You know, 70%, we're going to look at these outputs, the movement and the technical and tactical skills of the game. And then 30% might be a little bit of customization based on the person in front of me. So I might do a little extra for a pro or a high level athlete. If it's a middle schooler, I might do none of it and just be like, yeah, you just like, we all know what you need. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Some hours in the gym. Like,
yeah, exactly. You just need to get strong.
Yeah. You just need to get strong and like learn what a goblet squat is versus XYZ. So, I've kind of like loosened up on that a little bit because I used to be like, oh no, we need to get data on everybody. And eventually we will get the data because the data is kind of part of the training as well.
Yeah.
Like we use all the technology in training, not necessarily just to test. So we might not get it on day one. We might get it on day five, but it's like, yeah, if a middle school athlete comes in, I might not strap them to the 1080 on day one because they might look just like a baby giraffe trying to run.
Yeah.
I have them try to do a skip, you know? So it's like that 30% gives me the wiggle room to say like, all right, we don't really need to impress mom and dad with all this technology. I can just tell them what they need and keep it real and go from there. So the assessment process, again, is kind of like a moving target. That's where we're at right now. In terms of retesting and kind of like going about that, I'm really, really big on like just using the training as the test. And mm-hmm. so it takes away all the anxiety, the false hype. It takes away all that. And you might hit a PR on a freaking normal Tuesday and just be like, oh, boom, you did it. Like, there's your 40-inch shirt. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't even have to like flicker the lights and bang Lil Wayne and like do all this extra Instagram stuff. Like, you just hit it because you got better. Like,
exactly.
Congratulations. So that's kind of where I'm at in terms of assessment, testing, and retesting, and trying to just help the athlete understand the process is also a big thing. Like, I probably in the past made some athletes feel like shit on their assessment day. You know what I mean? Like, hey,
we've all gone through that.
Yeah. Like, you suck and you're broken and you're slow and you got no bounce. Like, so I'm trying to find, like the positives on like, okay, this is where you're at, but it's okay because the reason why you're here is X, Y, Z, and I can help you with that, and that should get you here. So trying to like make it more positive, especially with the younger athletes, so it's not intimidating, and it's not like, you know, the comparison games can just kill an athlete's confidence. So it's more about just finding the way to keep them kind of like focused on the process and really buy into that and make sure they know like, yo, this isn't going to be like a come three times and, you know, you're going to see immediate results. It's like, you might have to spend the summer with us and then we can really talk about where you're at. So that, I would say, is the biggest part of the assessment process, is just like explaining the process to the athlete.
I think that's a big thing, especially because like, I feel like as coaches, the big thing is we're teachers first. So like, we need to be educating the athletes along the route, along this journey that they're on with us, no matter how long it is. Like, it could be, you know, a couple months, it could be a year, it could be a couple years. We have to be explaining to them what they're doing. Listen, they're not us. So like, they don't care about the super sciencey words, but if you can explain to them in a very basic way what they're doing, why they're doing it, and ultimately what the plan is to get them to where they want to be. That's what they care about. They want to get to where they want to be. So their end goal is what's important to them. You just have to educate them as to what they're doing to get to that end goal.
For sure. Yeah. It's like, there's so many like good, like pros and cons of social media. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the cons is that it's given like a false sense of what it takes to get results, because, and I'm probably guilty of it or feeding into it myself, but it's like, everything's like five ways to do this or the best way to do that. And it's dangerous because everybody can see that. And so it used to be like on the private side, you would only have to hear athletes say like, well, you know, my dad said I should do this, or, you know, my coach said I should do this. And then you could have a conversation with dad or coach, or, you know, maybe they did give some good input, some reasonable input that you're like, yeah, that's a good idea, I'll implement that. But now it's more of like, oh, I saw this on Instagram, I saw this, and oh, can we do this? And I'm like, well, no, because that would be something that I would put in like this part of your program. And we're actually way over here on this part of your program. And like, we can't skip those steps. You know what I mean? So I think, especially with this younger generation, that's been like one of the biggest battles, is trying to not compete with social media, but just try to even educate them on, you know, hey, if you see something, you know, that looks cool or enticing, and you really, really want to do it, like, shoot it my way, and I might try to find a way we can implement it. But if it's not like exactly what you need, I'm not going to make you do that, because that's not for you. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what you need to your end goal. So, and honestly, man, I've probably fallen victim to that as an athlete myself. Like, try some shit I saw on Instagram, and I'm like, wait, who am I? Like, I'm 33 years old. I play in rec leagues now. Like, I don't need to be doing all this. Like, it's not that deep. So
yeah, exactly. I think like that's like the big thing. The big like the big thing with this generation is that, you know, we have to compete with what they're seeing online. I always say social media is a gift and a curse, because it's like it's a gift in the sense that back then when we were coming up, like there was very little information that was out there. And if there was, we had to go to massive extremes to find it. Yeah. But now it's like, now today, it's a good thing that, like, listen, we can open our phones, we could type in a question and we get an answer for it. But back, but like, there's also a double-edged sword where, yes, there's information that comes up, but that information might not be the best for your particular situation or where you're currently at.
No, dude, it's crazy, especially like with this Twitter update now, where you can basically like buy Twitter Blue, right? And you get verified, right? Okay, whatever. Like, I don't, no judgment, but you can get tricked. Like, I got tricked the other day on the NBA trade deadline because a verified account was like, it said that the Pacers traded Buddy Hield. And I just was scrolling. I said, oh shit, that verified account said we traded Buddy Hield. Now I tell all my group chats, like, damn, we got rid of Buddy. And then everybody's like questioning me, like, where are you seeing that? Where are you seeing that? So I had to go find the tweet. And then I actually look hard and I'm like, oh man, I got tricked by a fake verified account. Like, it's so bad.
It's so bad. Yeah. It's like, you gotta double check the source. I always say
verified badge and be like, okay, is this Twitter Blue? Okay. I don't know. Then this might not be, it's not Woj or Shams.
That's what I was about to say. I'm like, unless it comes from Woj or Shams, I don't believe it. So that's definitely the double-edged sword that we got to deal with though. But going back to what we were saying, I don't want to get too off track. But what might be some means and methods that you use to kind of blend the two together when it comes to training?
Yeah. So, you know, it really depends on, you know, obviously the athlete in front of you, but from a perfect world, like general standpoint, something I'm big on is, you know, developing weaknesses, trying to turn those weaknesses into strengths and using those strengths to help develop the weaknesses, whether it be on the court, whether it be in the weight room, whatever. So just from a general standpoint, that's kind of like my rule of thumb is, what can we use that you're good at to raise everything else? So if it is somebody who's, I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head, like a real world example, basically somebody who's like, loves the weight room, right? Like you get those guys or those girls that they just love to lift and they love to just be in the weight room. And that's, I love that. You know what I mean? But that can also kind of be an obstacle for them at certain points, because they might beat themselves to a pulp if they are not monitored in the weight room, or they might just like overdo it, or they might spend so much time on that side of training that they don't get enough out of the other side of training. So it's like, okay, I got an athlete that loves the weight room. How can I get their love for the weight room onto the court or in other aspects of their training? And so you just make that weight room training kind of like what they lack, you know? So if they're like a strong but slow type of athlete, like low RSI, not very like quick twitch, then we can change their lifting around that and go for more like a higher rate of force development, start doing some concentric only stuff, some loaded jumps. Like, they're still in the weight room. They're still loving it because they're banging iron and they love all that. And they love the culture of the weight room, but you've kind of like tricked them now into doing the other end of the force velocity curve and like getting more out of that, because that's what they need to develop that athleticism. So that's like a common example in the weight room. And then on the court, same thing. You might have the guy or the girl that loves to play. Like, all they want to do is just play pickup. And you're like, okay, I love pickup. You get a lot out of pickup, but there's also a high risk in pickup because, you know, it could get sloppy really quick.
Yeah.
Games mean nothing. It's the perfect opportunity to turn your ankle on some bullshit, you know, just last game of the day, everybody's tired and messing around. And so you take that athlete who loves pickup and you're like, okay, how can I get them to train more like tactically and get a lot out of that so they don't burn themselves out just playing five days a week. And then you might add small-sided games to that person's yep. program. You might add more like one-on-one stuff, or I might play some dummy defense to get them to like work on their reads. So I'll like deliberately overplay something or put my foot somewhere that they have to respond to when I'm playing defense. So working in their strengths into the program to like turn not even weaknesses, but like just things that they might not enjoy as much into something that is more enjoyable so that we can get that little bit of adaptation from it and then move on without them feeling like I had to force them or beg them to do something that they didn't want to do. So that would be like more of my coaching outlook, if you will. Yep. And then from like a science standpoint, letting that data guide you, you know what I mean? Just absolutely. Watching the DBT, watching the 1080 numbers and trying to figure out like we're big on kind of like, I don't like to like categorize athletes, but I sometimes like to put them in like just like a bucket, if you will, where yeah. it's just a starting point on what they might be so that we can start somewhere and then use that data to help us further customize the program. So you might be, you know, strong and slow, or you might be weak and fast. And those are just two like very general buckets, but we have like five or six that we would like categorize people into. Yep. It gives us just a starting point to be like, okay, you know, this person, they're really good at acceleration because they're strong. But after that, it kind of falls apart. So
yeah, absolutely.
We can enhance some of those like top end speed mechanics, and we can sprinkle in some more like, elasticity into their program and try to help them kind of bridge that gap from being like those strong, like bulky accelerators to like having some rhythm and turning that acceleration into speed down the line. So just trying to let that data guide us and use the coaching eye and say like, these are what the numbers are telling me. This is what I'm seeing in training. This is what I'm seeing on film or on the court or the feedback that they're giving me. And so now we can just sprinkle in whatever needs to be sprinkled in to make that program even more effective.
Yeah. And I think that's what's so important about actually being able to collect kind of data when you're in training, no matter what. I know there's a lot of coaches that obviously give pushback when it comes to data because they're like, oh, like you can't just go off the data. Like, you know, there's other parts of it, but it's like, it really does. If you actually know what you're looking at when you look at these things, it can actually steer and guide your programming decisions if you actually know how to implement it the right way. I find that often the people that criticize data the most are usually the people that don't know what to do with it. And that's usually the people that are mostly criticizing what you and I do. I'm very also big into data. Like we're tracking pretty much everything, whether, you know, whether it's vert numbers, whether it's your sprint numbers, whether it's, you know, relative strength numbers. Like these are things that we got to take into consideration because they're all things that can help us steer programming decisions based on the little changes that happen to the body over time. And it's like, if you're a coach out there who thinks that you're going to be able to get away with just programming off of a whim without taking any data into consideration, you're kind of going to be like, you're kind of going to be lost over time. You're not going to know what to do.
Yeah. It's like, for me, I think I'm pretty good at my job and I think I'm smart, right? But I'm not smarter than the human body.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Definitely not smarter than a computer that's designed to accept all this data, right? So I really let that influence me. And like you said, you let it guide you, but you also will see other things that you mm-hmm. in person can manipulate. But yeah, when it comes to that, that information is coming directly from that athlete's output, whether it be VBT, sprint numbers, jump numbers. That's the actual athlete giving you that number. So the number that you're working on is like directly from another human's brain. And like I said, I'm not smarter than the human brain. So I'm going to accept that and let it influence me and guide me, and it may not even need to influence a change but it can spark a conversation and it can spark an investigation of like just simply asking, you know, okay, like if you do like readiness jumps or something like that, you know, I don't have a force plate yet, but I'm definitely thinking about it. But we've used like RSI testing as like readiness and have like kind of a scale. And so, you know, if you're like, so you see somebody kind of like in the red, if you will, it might not be that they're losing that quality. It's like, you can just be like, hey, what's you good? Like, is everything okay? And then you can find out, I slept like shit, or I ate like shit, or I just don't feel good today. Or, you know, they could just be like, that wasn't my best jump. Like, let me try it again. And then they try it again and they're right back to where they should be.
Yep.
And so it's simple things like that, you know, you definitely let the data just tell you to probe further. And then you can find out a lot from there. Like I just got an Oura ring and I'm really loving that so far, because I'm learning that, yeah, the data is helpful, but there are certain days where it's going to say you aren't as ready as you were yesterday, or you're off your average, but you also got to push through those tough days.
Yeah.
So that's your job as a coach to determine when that is, because if you can find out why, you know, if somebody's boyfriend or girlfriend broke up with them, or they got an F on a test, bro, we're still training. You know what I mean? Like, if you sprained your ankle, that's different. But like, it's like, okay, I woke up, my readiness is 71. Okay, why? Okay, maybe I ate bad yesterday, or maybe I slept bad, but like physically I'm okay. I can just alter the training to meet where I'm at physically, and then we'll get through it. But I'm not going to just take a day off because this ring and an app told me like, hey, be careful today. You know, you don't want to push it. It's like, no, we got to get some work in still. At the end of the day, those are some of the best days to get work in, when you can like manipulate it to where you're going through like some adversity and train through it. You can get a lot out of those sessions.
Yeah, I guess that kind of leads into like my next thought that I wanted to go into. And that's like, how do you look to manage stressors over a week to week basis with a lot of these athletes? You mentioned, you know, doing RSI, doing readiness jumps and stuff like that. What does that look like from a week to week perspective? And then also, how do you structure the weeks with these athletes in terms of if they're doing both with you, skills and whatever? How might a week look like for both a skills session and in the weight room?
Got you. So in terms of like load management, a lot of it will do, I used to do the readiness jumps, and then I started having a lot of issues with my just jump mat.
Yeah.
It was just like inconsistent, and I was like second guessing myself and my whole system. So I just like, all right, this is too much. So I went back to, just conversation and seeing where they're at, and then either knowing what they're doing on the court or asking or figuring it out. And then I really started to use like those first two sets of whatever the A is, like to of the VBT, or if it's a sprint, to let that guide me as far as like what the readiness is. So I've been, it's kind of, you know, it's not as structured as it once was. It's more intuitive now, which I think there's definitely some benefits to. I do want to get back into probably some kind of like metric that I can implement every day, but it just became like such a thing, you know what I mean? Where it's like, all right, you know, are we like overkill here? Are we doing too much? So that's kind of where I'm at. It's kind of still in progress, like figuring out what I want to do. It might end up being on some type of force deck, just a jump or, you know, iso pull or something like that. But I've experimented with that over the years. I've done like grip testing. I've done jump testing, but it's actually been good for me to work on the more intuitive side too, because you can get the info from the athlete, then you can get them warmed up. Then you can go into like the sprint, the jump, or the first lift of the day, whatever that case may be. And you can look at that data and just kind of like see if it coincides with like what you were already thinking was going to happen. And so, you know, there have been certain times where I might think an athlete's like going to be fried, And then they go and they get on whatever that first lift or jump or run is, and they kill it. And I'm like, all right, we're rocking today. And I won't even say anything. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you don't even want to put that in the athlete's head. So that's where I'm at now. As far as like the structure of a program, I kind of have like three phases of the program as far as, you know, what I want to get out of each phase. The first one, we're going to go with more of like a force dominant phase. So in the weight room, we're trying to get strong. We're really focusing on our eccentric and our isometric strength. So we're going to use a lot of K-box. We're going to use a lot of tempo. It depends like when an athlete gets home or when they start training. I might do some 1x20 like for 2 weeks before this phase to get like some PPP, just like some aerobic capacity, some movement quality going back into the system. But yeah, that first phase, a lot of force. So on our sprint work, we're doing a lot of acceleration, a lot of heavy acceleration, a lot of resisted running, a lot of heavy jumps, some more basic plyometrics. Lifting, like I said, is going to be our heaviest of the summer.
Yep.
A lot of eccentric, a lot of isometric strength. I love the K-box for checking both those boxes, but then I also like doing some, you know, just some traditional stuff with tempo and things of that nature. And then on the court, we're going to basically work in, we're going to try to mimic what we're doing as far as outputs in the weight room. So like the speed, we got the force dominant side with the acceleration. The lift, we got the force dominant side with the eccentric and the isometric stuff. And then on the court, that's going to be kind of our most like general performance, if you will, where we're just working back into things because we're probably the most sore and the most tired that we've been in a while. So we're going to get a lot of volume shots up. We're going to go through some acceleration stuff on the court as well, some different angles, some different resistances there. But it's more of like a general, like, get that capacity back from the time that you spent away from the game. Yeah. So a lot of things are going to be just very simple. You know, we might do like Monday in the weight room. I'm trying to like structure this in my head so I can make it come out smooth. But Monday in the weight room, we're doing our push day. So, you know, obviously that's front, more of the front side of the body. So a lot of squat variations, a lot of press variations. Our assistance work is going to lift those up. So our main lifts, we're trying to get the weak points of those main lifts to kind of accelerate. Mm-hmm. And then Wednesday, we go into our pull day. So, you know, your deadlift variation, your row variations.
Yep.
And then accessories for that. Then Friday is our multi-plane day. So we're working in frontal and transverse plane, kind of getting some of those like in between movements where your main movement might be something that's like a single leg bridge variation or some type of rotational lunge or side lunge, something like that. Single arm press, bird dog row, something that's going to challenge like all three planes of motion. And it's probably our lightest day in terms of load, but it's actually one of the hardest days because of the exercise choice where it's like a little bit of that like obscure kind of outside the box thinking on that day. The speed work on those days coincides with what the lift is. So on Monday, the push day, we're working more of the acceleration stuff. We're going to do some jumps, some broad jumps, some things like that. Wednesday on the pull day, we might do some more like top end velocity mechanics stuff to kind of work in some of the hamstrings.
Yep.
Further in the program is when we'll actually do those longer sprints. And then on Friday, the multi-plane day, we're working in more of like our speed and agility work. So if we stack the core on top of that, then we're going to try to be synergistic on the court with what we're doing in the weight room. If we stack it between like on a Tuesday or a Thursday, then we might have to alter the load because I'm big on like making the hard days the hard days. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%.
If you're going to do all that in the weight room on a Monday, get on the court and knock out your court work on a Monday. So you can either do a shooting workout on a Tuesday or you can take the day off and just make it an actual rest day.
Absolutely.
So in terms of, like, I'll take for an example, like on a Friday, a multi-plane day, what that might look like is let's say we go on the weight room first, right? I would prefer the court first, but sometimes it doesn't work out like that.
Yep.
You basically get your work in. So you get your speed and agility work in. Let's say in phase one, we're going to do some lateral bound combinations. We might do like some hip flips to a shuffle,
yep,
working on, you know, that whole hip turn movement quality. We might do some resisted shuffles or some time shuffles to get the competition going. Then we go into the weight room. We get our lift in. We might do a work up to a heavy set of three on side lunge, go into some bird dog rows, go into some type of, you know, lateral step up, single arm. I'm big on like a single arm bridge press.
Yep.
So like you're bridging on the left leg and your right leg is pressing. So it's like the opposite of dead bug, if you will.
Yep.
Sprinkle in some accessory lifts and then hit the court. On the court, we're going to be working on our lateral separation moves. So we just hit all that lateral and multi-plane strength. Now we're going to bring it on the court. We might be doing some type of sidestep, some type of curved run, some type of like lateral separation, like a runaway or something like that out of a pick and roll read where you're just going to like kind of hold the defender off and then separate.
Yeah.
Working some things in like that. And, you know, I'm kind of freestyling right now, but I like to like have all this written out months in advance. So we just know what we're working on and we're getting it in and we're getting out. And then that might be that Friday. So that might be, you know, 3 hours of work right there. It's all kind of synergistic to itself. And then, you know, you got all your work in, you don't need to do anything else and you can go recover. So that would be like a, you know, a snapshot of what we do. And my second phase, we're going into like more power stuff. So that first phase is more of like the force. Then we go into power. So we're going to work into the same split. So it's the same Monday push, Wednesday pull, Friday multi-plane day. But we might work in some concentric only stuff. We might work in some loaded jumps. We might add some accommodating resistance like bands, chains. We're really trying to hit some target numbers on the VBT, like staying in that 0.85 range is kind of like my sweet spot.
Yep.
And same thing. Just the theme continues.
Does time of year come into place with this? Like, obviously, like, you know, you have your off season versus in season. What might fall into each category here?
Yeah. So like what I'm describing is like a perfect world off season.
Yeah.
I get 3 months, you know, that first phase, that first month, we're going that force. Second month, we're going into that power. Third month, we're going like max velocity. So now we're getting longer distance running. We're getting lighter lifting at much higher speeds.
Absolutely.
Some ballistic stuff. On the court, we're going live more. So all that kind of plays into it to itself where you start to get closer to the game time, closer to go to camp or into the season. And so you're trying to mimic that, you know, where it's like, in phase one, everything's scripted. Everything's like, do this, do that.
Yep.
Phase two, you implement more constraints. You kind of take the brakes off a little bit and you let them explore. Phase three, on the court, you're going more alive. You're going more chaotic. Your drills are more reaction-based. Your speed in the weight room is like through the roof. Like you're trying to hit the highest velocities. Or if you're going back to like the athlete preference, like if you got an athlete that loves the weight room, in that third phase, I might not do all this high velocity lifting. I might go to like a fringe contrast, right? So you're a meathead. You love to lift. All right, that's cool. Keep going heavy, but I'm going to make you do three jumps or plyos or sprints after. So we still get that same output and you are happy because you're still moving heavy weight, right? So that's kind of where I'm at in the off season. In season, It's all, you know, case by case. Like I would love to be able to control more variables, obviously, in season. Yeah,
for sure.
I spent 2 seasons on staff at a high school here called Warren Central, where I was like loving it, bro, because it was like I could control all that. And coach gave me free rein. And I knew the schedule. I knew the practice schedule. I knew I could implement lifts around that. I knew what our travel schedule would be. Like, we were playing like super, super high level. We had our top player. He's at Seton Hall now, actually. So like, we're playing all these invitationals because people wanted to see him. And it was like a little mini college team. And I'm like, damn, this is like the dream. Like, he would, coach, let me do whatever. And he wouldn't question it. And so, you know, in a perfect world, that's what that looks like. But if you're on the private side and that's all you do, then you kind of just have to work around some of those outside influences, get the work in when you can. And I'm huge on in-season training, but I'm also big on, I actually just had a conversation with a parent about this, kind of bringing it full circle about, you know, our earlier conversation. It's about to be sectional time here, which is the first round of the playoffs.
Yep.
There's a really, really high level player and he's trying to get in. And I told him, no, I'm like, I haven't seen you all season. I don't know what you're doing. Yeah. I've never trained you before. About to go into the most important time of the year. I was like, it might actually be worse to start training right now because
for sure
we're going to implement all these new variables and all these new things to you. We don't know how you're going to respond and we don't know how that's going to influence your play. And to me, it's not worth it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
We'll get right after the season, but that hurt, you know what I mean? Cause I'm like, I want to help. And that's my way of helping is actually like turning you away because I think it might be better for you right now to just keep doing what you're doing. So in the season, I'm big on, I try not to take new clients because I really want to know what you've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
If I've been doing it with you, it's easy for me to know. If it's early in the season, that's one thing. But like the later you get in the season, I feel like the more variables you change, the harder it's going to be to kind of like continue with that level of play that you've had. So in season, I'm big on train hard, train where you can. I like to match stimulus. So if you got a hard day, make it a really hard day. Don't make it a hard day and then the next day a hard day, because then you got two hard days in a row.
Yep.
Which could be a really hard day and a light day to let you recover. Then that next day is medium or whatever. But yeah, I'm big on keep what you've been doing, alter it to match like whatever the time of year is. But you know, you got to be really careful in season because you could honestly just like,
you could do more damage than good.
You could, yeah. It's like on the private side, it's really hard. I'll say that, and I know you know that.
I do know that.
It's like, man, it's hard because you got all these things that you want to do, and all these plans and like the perfect program in your head, but then, you know, coach punishes the team with like 8 suicides after practice because like so and so was late and forgot their practice jersey, and you're like, damn, we were gonna like hit actually a heavy squat today because it was a great day to do that.
Yeah.
Now, coach did that, so let's not do that because it's not
because smart. We don't want to kill you now. It's this never ending game where you have to kind of like, because I'm actually going through it right now. I have a couple athletes that are in season, so it's like just random, just one day, just a kid comes in and it's just like, yeah, like we're, because she's in season right now, but she's also off season for, because she's a softball player. So she's doing off-season softball workouts. And these off-season softball workouts, if you saw them, you would think that she was trying to train to be like the next like Avenger. Like they have her doing some crazy stuff. And she literally told me, because we were supposed to hit a heavy trap bar. She was going to go for like a heavy, heavy set. And she's like, I don't think I'm going to be able to hit it today. And I'm like, why is that? She's like, oh, our coach literally just made us run for a half hour straight. She was just like, oh, we were asking her when we were going to stop. She's like, I'll tell you when to stop. Keep going.
Yeah.
Like, that's great. I'm like, so legs are fried. Can't do anything.
Yeah. So, you guys can stop when I get tired. Like that's the famous
coach. That's usually always what it is.
It's not even limited to the high school level. Like I have a guy who's playing in Belgium right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the conversation for the MVP of the Belgium league. It's a really high level league and he's the guy, right? He's the guy on the team. So actually tweeted about this, and basically he's playing 31 minutes a game, right? So it's 40, it's a 40 minute game.
40 minute game, yep.
He's playing 31 minute games. His usage rate is through the roof. He's averaging like 19-5-5. They're a playoff contender for the first time in years. Like, it's a very important time of year. He's like, bro, my legs are fried. He's like, coach is having me do extra conditioning as two-a-days. And this is at the pro level.
Yeah.
So Tuesdays and Thursdays, they got practice damn near every day. Tuesdays and Thursdays, he has to come back at night and do extra conditioning. And I'm like, he's in shape. He plays 31 minutes a game and he's killing the whole league. Like, what do you want? You know what I mean? Like,
now,
what?
If you're the guy at the, you know, that's playing left bench who never sees the floor, maybe that person needs right. some more conditioning, yeah. but not the guy who's playing near damn near the whole game.
It's like, how does that make sense? You know what I mean? And I've talked to like so many strength coaches that do an amazing job. Like, they use, dude, the box score is like the most easy data to look at. It's like, look at the minutes played.
Yeah.
You'll get their load to a certain extent. Like, if you don't have Catapult or, you know, whatever GPS system, if you don't have Force Dex, if you don't have Synergy or Huddle, look mm-hmm. at a box score and you can get yep. a lot of info from that. And it's like, yeah, you said you got a DNP on your team. Yeah, you should definitely get some extra conditioning in. But like, if you're playing 31 out of 40 minutes, I think you're in shape, especially if your performance is not suffering. Like, yep. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but it is what it is.
That's for damn sure, man. But obviously, you know, all that's super important. If you have time, I do want to get to a little bit of a lightning round though at the end.
Bro, I got time. As much time as you need, I got time.
All right. Well, it's just four quick questions. So it's really not, you can go into as much detail or anything as possible. It could be a one word thing, whatever you want. First one, I know you're a little bit of a shoe head. So yep. I want you to give me your top five shoes to hoop in.
Ooh, that is tough. All right. This is going to be kind of crazy. Like, a lot of people are not going to know what to think about this. My number one shoe is called the Puma Nitro Fusion, I think.
Uh-huh.
So that's what I hoop in. It's the best shoe I've ever hooped in.
That's actually pretty surprising. I don't think anybody I've ever asked this question to starts with Puma.
But I'm telling you, get a pair. It's the best shoe that I've ever had.
Like, I'll definitely have to look into those.
Unreal, dude. So Puma has a couple of really good shoes, but that's a really good one.
Uh-huh.
So I would say the Puma Fusion Nitro or Nitro mm-hmm. Fusion, one of those. I really like the, the LeBron 20
mm-hmm.
that just came out is fire. I like the Kobe 7.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe 7s are good. Number four, I'll go with, I'll go with the PG1.
The PG1s are good. They're very underrated.
Underrated. And then the fifth one, I will say the KD with the strap. I think it's the four?
Fours, yeah. Yeah.
The KD with the strap. So yeah, the Puma, the LeBron 20, Kobe 7 or 8 is acceptable there too.
Mm-hmm.
The PG1 underrated, and then the KD with the strap, whatever one that is.
I like it. I like it. Very, very unconventional start to the list, but I like the rest of them. next one, you're hitting the gym later today. What's your top artist that you're bumping to get you going?
Oh, so right now this is so bad. You know who Baby Tron is?
I don't know who he is.
So, Baby Tron, all right, he's Detroit. He's a Detroit rapper. I don't know if you know anything about Detroit rap, but it's like either you love it or you hate it. And it's like that offbeat flow. You know what I mean? It's like
yeah.
second late or second early, but it slaps, and especially like when you're trying to like just get it in, like it just is just good vibes. The beats are crazy. The lyrics are 5 out of 10 at best, but yeah, listen to Baby Tron. He'll get you hyped for sure.
The vibes are what we're going for here. Yeah, so. For sure. Baby Tron. So you tweeted this the other day, and I kind of gave you some slack about it, but most improved player in the league, if the season ends today, what are we going with?
All right. So I'm on your show. So I do got to I got to respect your boy from the Knicks, Brunson.
Jalen Brunson. He's been balling.
But honestly, bro, I would have to, like, even though I'm an Indiana guy, right? Like,
Yeah.
Halliburton is going crazy.
He has been going nuts.
I think it has to be Lauri Markkanen, dude.
Yeah, like, he's been going stupid. I mean, the fact that he's also starting in the All-Star game too, like, it's crazy.
He went from being like, man, like on the Bulls, I don't know what happened. Like, if they just weren't using him or whatever. I mean, he looked trash. Like, he was not. Yeah.
He looked like a bust. Like, he looked like he was going to be, like, out of the league in a few years.
Yeah, he's cold. And so if I had a vote, I'd probably – that's my vote for sure.
I think Lowry I'll give you Lowry. He's been balling for sure. Guy was pretty much – I thought he was going to be out of the league in the next couple of years.
Chicago.
So, like, sure. Utah completely changed his career. Like, now he's looked at as a perennial all-star and even the franchise cornerstone now for Utah at this point.
So, 100%.
So I agree with you. Last one, I think this is a very controversial topic for basketball people, but LeBron just passed Kareem to make him the all-time leading scorer in NBA history. Where do you have him now in the all-time discussion? And why?
Oh, this is crazy. All right, let me tell you, this is
the most controversial question that anybody could get asked, but
this is a backstory. All right. So I was just on a podcast with my boy Justin, who's actually a financial advisor.
Yep.
He has this podcast all about branding and stuff. We got into this like super like nostalgic conversation, right? Just talking about like the journey, and it was just like had me in this mindset where it was like nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
So he asked me my Mount Rushmore of basketball players. And I was just in that mode of like, we talked a lot about me growing up and stuff.
Yeah.
And I asked him, I made it a point. I was like, is this like my favorite? And he was like, yeah. So I said, MJ, Kobe, AI, and Vince Carter, because that was
a good list.
Growing up, like that was my favorite players. You know what I mean? Like, those are the guys that made me love basketball.
It's actually really funny that you say that because those are actually like 5 of my favorite players all time.
Yeah. And so I felt horrible because I didn't put LeBron in. And I was like, I absolutely love LeBron. Like, I love LeBron. Like, the dude is unreal. But it was just like the conversation we were in and the vibe. Like,
the moment.
I went with those 4. Yeah. I went with like, The ones that raised me, basically.
For sure.
We're closer to LeBron's age. And
yeah.
And like those guys we grew up watching. So anyway, with all that being said, I will put LeBron as the greatest of all time. And I'll put him not even from like a basketball perspective, because obviously he's like top 5 in every statistical category that you could ever have. He's number 1 in many of them. He has a lot of, I guess, negative things that somebody could say about him. Like, you know, everybody has a rebuttal on why LeBron's not the GOAT, right?
Yep.
My thing is, like, he came in the league at 18, the most hyped player of all time. He dealt with that hype. He raised a family with that hype. He's never been in trouble. He's never had drama off the court. He's like literally like has this perfect reputation. Mm-hmm. Like, and people are actively trying to find dirt on him. I'm like, you can't find it.
Yep.
He has excelled for 20 years at this game. He's had very few injuries like that have, you know, debilitated his career. I think he's missed like probably
the groin injury was probably the worst one.
Yeah, the 90% of the injury or 90% of the games missed is probably by choice. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think that no person in the sport of basketball has dominated for the amount of years that he's dominated across three eras of the game now, with some of the best other GOATs, if you will, in terms of like other players that he's played against. I'm perfectly fine with MJ being the GOAT. Like, yeah. I would never argue against that. I just think, man, like LeBron, what he's done, I don't think we'll ever
he's
see.
He's still going. He's yeah, still going.
I think he has five more years left.
He said he wants to play till both of his boys or at least one of them is in the league with him.
I think he has five more years left. And not to mention, I think three of those years is at this level. I think yeah. if he wanted to take a backseat, like a mentor role, like a Udonis Haslam or like a role like that, bro might be able to get 10 more years. Like,
yeah,
like,
he could probably play on the bench somewhere for another couple of years.
He could probably like honestly play 15 minutes a game like 5 years from now and come in and be effective. Like, I'm just like, that's a long answer, bro. But I just think like at this point, I think he's the greatest athlete and has done the most things for the sport. And I think he has the total package of like, crown him as the GOAT. And yeah, I think there's an argument to be made for MJ. I don't know if it's worth my energy, bro. Like, let LeBron
it's a lot. I mean, listen, I completely agree with you. I'm all game for LeBron being named the GOAT. I'm all game for MJ being the GOAT. I think Michael Jordan is the best winner of all time. Like, he is. Sure. He's the best winner. Like, he just like, whatever. If you need a bucket, if you need the games on the line, MJ's your guy.
For sure.
100%. 100% agree. But I also agree that LeBron has probably been the guy that has been the guy to do it for the longest. And that's like, that's something. And a lot of, I actually had this argument with my business partner the other day because he hates LeBron. He hates LeBron. And I love LeBron. So like, so he was going in on him and he was just like, you know, longevity stats shouldn't count for anything. And like, I'm like, yeah, but then Kareem wouldn't be in the discussion either. Cause it's like Kareem did it for like 20 plus years too. So it was just I don't know. I told him, I'm like, it's just one of those things where the guy has continued to change the narratives about him every single year. Like, you know, a couple of years back when he was joining the Lakers, everybody was like, oh, his career is done. Like, he's washed, like this, that, and the other thing. Came in, got a championship. Like, it's just one of those things where it's like the guy's continuing to climb whatever challenge is being put in front of him. And I think just the pure longevity of him being able to do it for so long, it's like you can't deny that he's at least in that discussion. Like, he's there.
I think like, yeah, I actually just tweeted about the longevity thing. Like, people will say that's a negative, and I'm like, I think it's positive because if you think about it, that's part of what makes you great, that you're available to take care of yourself. I think another thing that LeBron does that MJ wasn't as good at is like making those around him better on and off the court.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said about that. You know what I mean? Like, MJ was such a competitor that, you know, and I would say he's definitely a higher level competitor than LeBron, like his tenacity, all that, like the grit. But that cost him some things. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he's
for sure.
He's got legit like enemies and legit people that just like don't respect him because of how he treated people. And, you know, people will say, well, that's what it takes to win. But, you know, LeBron has done the opposite and has still four
it's
rings.
Still won. Yeah. And so,
it's like, I go back to, you know, there's always a rebuttal for everything. Like, if it was about championships, then shit, MJ wouldn't even be the GOAT. It'd be Bill Russell.
Bill Russell would be the GOAT. I say that all the time.
Yeah, if it was about, you know, skill, then maybe Kobe's the GOAT. If it's about just the total package, like, I just think, like you said, LeBron just encompasses all of the things. And, I've never seen anything like it. Like,
I think he's the best complete player. Like, we haven't seen a complete player. I'd say the biggest thing that I think he doesn't give enough credit for is his defense over the years. Mm-hmm. Like, people don't realize that, like, he was a pretty big, like, he got snubbed a couple times early on in his career for defensive player of the year and even, like, all defensive teams. The guy was averaging near 2 to 3 blocks a game early on in his career, and he doesn't get any credit for being that guy who was actually an impact player on the defensive end. I think that's probably a big knack on his career, because Jordan had so many accolades on that end of the ball. I just don't think he was given enough credit. I think actually Marc Gasol stole a Defensive Player of the Year award from him 1 year.
Yeah. So. And, bro, you can make a case that LeBron's been the MVP for like at least 15 years out of his 20.
I think they just got bored giving him the MVP.
You just can't give it to the same guy every year. Like,
yeah,
you'll lose money and owner and viewership and all that. Like, that's another thing. He's completely changed the business of the NBA as well.
For sure.
And whether that's good or bad, it is what it is. Like, he's changed it to the point where he's empowering players, and now we're seeing the player empowerment era, if you will. And mm-hmm. I think it's a good thing, because I think that, you know, players deserve to have control over, like, what they do with their body. You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
Physical attributes get them paid, and they should be able to dictate, you know, how they use them. So, yeah, bro, that could be a whole nother podcast.
That could be, we could keep going on this one, but
I really do respect either one though. Like, if you say MJ, like, I'm gonna be like, I think it's LeBron, but I don't really have the energy to argue with you. So you got it. You know what I mean?
For sure. For sure. I agree with either one, but last closing thoughts. If you could go back in time and give a younger Justin Ochoa any piece of advice, business, training, life, whatever it might be, what would it be?
Damn, that's tough.
That's the hard hitting one.
That's hard. Yeah. You got me thinking now.
That's tougher than the LeBron MJ one.
Dude. Yeah, for sure. I would just say, younger JO advice. I would say, like, be patient. Be patient, because I felt like I was maybe a little bit entitled, a little bit growing up, but coming into my career of strength conditioning. Not everybody knows the work you put in, right, behind closed doors.
Yep.
And you yourself could be so eager to show that work. This is good for athletes too. Be patient. Like, you know the work you put in. So you in your heart might feel that you're deserving of XYZ, you know, like, that should be my job, or that should be my starting position, or I should have got that award, because you know what you put in to get there, but everybody else doesn't know. And so you got to give them time to realize the work that's put in. You got to give them time to realize, like, what you're capable of, and what, you know, what your purpose is and all that stuff. So I think earlier as a young coach, I was a little frustrated because of my lack of patience, because I knew how hard I worked to get to that point, and I felt like I just deserved more and I was entitled to more. But that's actually not how it works. You're not entitled to shit. You got to earn it, and you got to take risks to get the opportunities, and you got to really, like, pursue your dreams. So just be patient and keep working on what you're working on, and it'll come.
I love it, man. And lastly, where can everybody find you?
So I'm on Instagram and Twitter at JustinOchoa317. And that's pretty much, that's where I hang out, man. Like, honestly, I don't do, like, much on Facebook. Like, I'll post pictures of my kids, and, like, people that I don't know will tell me how cute they are. But that's basically how Facebook works.
That's Instagram, pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, Instagram, Twitter, find me on there. You can find the podcast from there. You can definitely shoot me a DM, an email, whatever. I'd love to connect with everybody and just kind of grow my network, man. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. If you guys haven't, definitely go listen to this guy's podcast, Gem Sessions. It's really great. I love it.
I'm going to get you on there soon.
Absolutely. We'll got to make it happen.
Just run it back, just in recording, and then we'll just
end and just let it go. All right. Yeah, man. But thank you again for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time. I know your time is valuable. So thank you again for blessing us today.
Man, thank you so much for having me. This was fun.